Chapter 19. Everything in the lab was out of whack today, and Tully's hangover wasn't helping. Spence had tidied up his work area again, even though he'd told her over and over and over not to, because now he couldn't find anything, and what equipment he could find was glitchy if it worked at all. The workbench monitor was totally dead, forcing him to use a spare tablet. Several times he'd nearly knocked it onto the floor before he finally wedged it between a partly disassembled centrifuge and a box full of stray parts on a shelf above the work surface, where it was safe, but at an awkward angle. It was his own fault. Everybody knew that when you woke up face down on the floor, you should stay there. He was about to call time on the whole day when the tablet lit up with Jackson's face. "What now?" he snapped. "And good morning to you too, sunshine," Jackson said. "What's your problem?" Had she really just asked him that? "Get some goddamn maintenance people down here right goddamn now, will ya?" Tully said testily. "I need them to run a diagnostic on the stasis system. The pressure differential's off and the reads keep fluctuating. I'm going out of my mind here. Punch it to priority one request. Trent'll okay it. Right now, I'm her fair-haired progeny, or I'd better be," he added darkly. "Oh, your wish is my command," Jackson's head bobbed as she used the light pen clipped to her hat on her screen. "I live to serve, all of that. Hey, you went in on the Super Bowl? Is that why you couldn't call me back until now, because you're making the interstellar book?" Tully said. "Pass." "Sure about that?" Jackson wiggled her eyebrows, making the light pen bounce. "You don't want Denver?" "God, no," he rolled his eyes. "Give me a 10th on Chicago." "Chicago?" Her expression said he had to be crazy. "Okay, but it's your funeral." "And my maintenance," he growled. "Right goddamn now." A day went by. Maintenance visited and things progressed. Another day passed. "There's an irony in this," Soslav said, gazing at the alien embryo. It floated in its own private world of nutrient contained in a stasis tube about a half meter long and 30 centimeters in diameter, an older model that took up most of the work surface. While there was no discernible movement, Soslav was sure he could actually see it growing before his eyes. "Irony, Colonel Doctor?" Lara Braun was completely focused on the computer where she was entering data and adding notations. She was the only other person in the tissue lab, and they'd each been so engrossed in their respective concerns, they might as well have been alone. The tone in Braun's voice indicated she would have preferred it that way. "The readiness with which this organism lends itself to genetic manipulation," Soslav added. "The way its cells multiply so quickly." "I'd call that remarkable, not ironic," she said absently. As busy as she was, Soslav had expected more enthusiasm from her, given that this was a landmark moment. Perhaps this was her way of displaying a professional attitude. "It's as if the gene structure had been deliberately designed for ease of manipulation," he went on, "as well as what seems to be a universal compatibility with other plasms." Braun finally turned to look at him. "And this is ironic to you, Colonel Doctor? How?" "Ironic that we're attempting to weaponize tissue that combines so easily with other organic material." "I'm afraid I still don't know what you mean." "I think this alien is the fruit of an experiment begun a very long time ago. Perhaps so long ago as to be ancient by our reckoning," Soslav replied. "A living artifact, genetically engineered to be, first and foremost, a weapon that ends war by ending the enemy. To vanquish a foe, any foe, all foes, permanently. This species could be the product of an arms race that escalated while we were still learning to paint on cave walls." Braun's expression was dubious. "Since we don't know where the organism came from, we can't know what kind of forces shaped its development," she said, her tone stiff and formal. "What we do know is that this project will strengthen the position of the UPP among other sovereign nations. I truly believe this. Otherwise, I wouldn't commit my time and effort to it, not even if I were ordered to." Translation? She wanted to get back to work with no further interruptions for philosophy or speculation about weapons developed by some ancient alien intelligence. Soslav nodded, and she turned back to the computer. Braun did love her data, while he went back to studying the creature in the stasis tube, which to his eye resembled an eyeless fetal dolphin. Perhaps cloning these things would help them understand the creature's methods of reproduction. What kind of natural biology could produce a creature that laid eggs containing an organism with a lifespan of hours and existed only to forcibly deposit a larva in a living host, which would provide sustenance until its explosive, fatal emergence? Once it was out, it somehow grew from the size of a large rodent to a monster that towered over humans and had no other purpose or drive except to kill for as long as it lived, however long that was. Nowhere in any of the data gleaned from the robot or the Sulaco was there any indication of the species' natural lifespan, or even a vague estimate. Perhaps these creatures didn't die, unless they were killed. The robot's data was surprisingly rich in detail, more than Suslov had expected from a machine. They are organic and alive, but that's all. They have no culture, no history, no attachments, no sense of self-preservation, no fear of injury or death. In fact, they seem to lack any concept of life and death, which would suggest that they also lack consciousness. Yet they have the capacity for planning. They can be cunning. They hunt, they set traps, and they have displayed what looks like rage, often as a reaction to injury. So far, we can infer that they feel pain, which made Suslov more certain than ever that the species had been constructed. Its contradictory biology made no sense in the context of natural evolution, and its terrifying, nightmarish characteristics made it a superb weapon. Even the most aggressive, empire-building civilization based on coercion and conquest might have a collective existential crisis after meeting a few facehuggers. This wasn't a weapon for warfare. It was an instrument of extermination.
That's quite a piece of machinery, Corporal Hicks.
Hicks looked up from the circuit board he was reconfiguring to see Bishop standing in the doorway of the workroom.
We used to say the same thing about you, he replied, grinning. Heard you got snatched up by the UPP. What's it like in the socialist paradise of progressive peoples?
Bishop tilted his head noncommittally.
The best thing I can say about them is they sent me home, but only because they had no further use for me.
He moved around the room, having a look at the open boxes, crates of spare parts, and the shelves full of hardware in need of fixing. Hicks was about to explain this was all busy work to keep him out of everyone else's way when Bishop added,
It appears Weyland-Yutani's weapons division intends to develop the alien, to fulfill its weapon potential, so to speak.
Reflexively, Hicks looked at the camera in the corner nearest the doorway, but not at the one he wasn't supposed to know about, in the opposite corner.
And where'd the bastards get that material? He asked in a low voice.
I assume you know about the alien that stowed away on the dropship and got aboard the Sulaco, Bishop said, speaking just as softly. It was much bigger than all the others. Ripley called it the Queen. She killed it.
Yeah,
Hicks' smile was grim.
Somehow the Queen deposited genetic material on the ship, Bishop went on, and the weapons division planned to make the most of it.
Then they're stone crazy, Hicks said. They just want to stay ahead of the UPP, who'll be trying to do the same thing. So much for the arms reduction treaty.
Treaties can't stop an arms race when there's a new kind of weapon in play, Bishop said. I'm programmed to protect human life. It's what I was made to do.
Pause.
Everything I am. Everything I know. Everything I've seen and learned tells me whatever experiments they're doing with the alien must be aborted.
I hear that, Hicks said.
But there's a problem.
Bishop hesitated, looking at him with a strange expression, especially for a synthetic.
I can't be entirely sure you can trust me.
You can't.
Hicks shook his head slightly.
Say again?
We have no way of knowing if the UPP tampered with me, Bishop said in the calm, matter-of-fact voice that could be maddening or reassuring by turns. I've undergone thorough examination, of course, and The most troublesome thing anyone has found is the quality of my knees. But my neural net is all fuzzy logic, so there's no way to be sure.
Unless we take off and nuke it from orbit, Hicks thought.
Something else occurred to him.
Wouldn't you know?
He asked Bishop.
I mean, wouldn't you feel different?
Bishop shook his head.
I wish it were that easy, but it isn't. If they buried an encrypted routine deeply enough, I won't know it's there till it activates. And they let you out of the lab anyway?
Now Bishop almost looked sheepish.
Since they couldn't find anything, they couldn't justify my taking up space. They think they'll learn more if they let me wander around, see if there's a trigger.
Hicks shrugged.
Either way, we have to kill this thing, this alien, right?
I have to try, Bishop said, whether you're with me or not.
You know I am, Hicks said, and I think I know where we can find us a little help. Maybe even a lot.